The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Did you know that there is a department within the executive branch of our government whose mission, I believe, has not been met since its inception and is the poster child for the lost leader department within the executive branch of the federal government? Yes, it is the Department of Energy. The DOE is a cabinet-level department whose mission is, I quote, to ensure America's security and prosperity by addressing its energy, environmental, and nuclear challenges through transformative science and technology solutions. Boy, doesn't that sound like a mouthful, or as they might say, a great plan. But have they accomplished their mission, and just how did all this come about? How did this department and this energy mission get its start? From its own mission statement, we find the words nuclear challenges. And I believe the place to start is with the beginning of the atomic age. Now, we all know from our grade school learning that uranium was first discovered all the way back in 1789 by a German scientist, and that this radioactive element was named after the planet Uranus. But from 1789, all remained fairly quiet, till that famous physicist Albert Einstein came up with his theory of energy, E equals mc squared. With this theory came the race to develop atomic energy, i.e. nuclear power. But the military application of atomic energy stepped in, and the Atomic Energy Act of 1946 created the Atomic Energy Commission, and we were on our way to a Department of Energy. During the Cold War years, the government was more concerned with atomic energy and its application to weaponry, but the 1970s brought about an additional interest in this atomic energy as a source of power rather than just as a military alternative. The event that placed emphasis on oil and energy independence was OPEC's embargo of 1973 and the subsequent actions of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, raising the price of the barrel of oil and cutting off supplies. These actions and response by the American government were to place America on the road to energy independence and the future creation of the Department of Energy. Let me give you a quote from Richard M. Nixon. Sometime in the 21st century, nuclear, solar, and geothermal may be sufficiently developed to meet the world's energy needs. But for now, we live in an age of oil. In the decades just ahead, this gives extraordinary strategic significance to the Persian Gulf. This means that one of the world's most troubled, unstable, and imperiled areas is also one of its most vital. In the industrial age, energy is the lifeblood of the economic system, and the economic power is the foundation of military power. Isn't it amazing that in 1973, we understood these concepts, that we needed to become energy independent? In that year, U.S. utility companies ordered 41 nuclear plants to be constructed. And by 1977, the Department of Energy Organization Act was passed, and we were on our way to what we, the American people, believed would be energy independence from the rest of the world, especially the Arab world. Recall also, in the 1950s, the United States was energy self-sufficient, but by the 1970s was importing roughly 35% of its oil, and its petroleum reserves were nearly gone. The signing of the Department of Energy Organization Act of 1977 by Jimmy Carter brought into existence the Department of Energy. That legislative action brought together, and I quote, one, defense responsibilities that included the design, construction, and testing of nuclear weapons dating from the Manhattan Project effort to build the atomic bomb during World War II, and two, a loosely knit amalgamation of energy-related programs scattered throughout the federal government. Let me put into perspective this historic period with two quotes from two different presidents during this time period. First, Jimmy Carter, in his address to the nation, April 18, 1977, I quote, "Because we are now running out of gas and oil, we must prepare quickly for a third change, to strict conservation and to the renewed use of coal and to permanent renewable energy sources like solar power." Now let me contrast that with a quote from Ronald Reagan in 1980, speaking about the Carter administration. "Large amounts of oil and natural gas lay beneath our land and off our shores, untouched because the present administration seems to believe the American people would rather see more regulation, taxes, and controls than more energy. Coal offers great potential. So does nuclear energy produced under rigorous safety standards. It could supply electricity for thousands of industries and millions of jobs and homes. It must not be thwarted by a tiny minority opposed to economic growth, which often finds friendly ears in regulatory agencies for its obstructionist campaigns." Alas, what happened in March of 1979? Yes, Three Mile Island happened, and the environmentalists went wacky. Movies, TV specials, panels. Remember the movie The China Syndrome? I ask, was there any nuclear threat to anyone from that event? I'll quote this from Wikipedia. "It was the worst accident in U.S. commercial nuclear power plant history. The partial meltdown resulted in the release of small amounts of radioactive gases and radioactive iodine into the environment. Epidemiology studies have not linked a single instance of cancer with this accident. And further, at the time of the Three Mile Island incident, 129 nuclear power plants had been approved. Of those, only 53, which were not already operating, were completed." Folks, this is a conversation that took place in 1977 and 1980. Does this not sound like today? Two opposing viewpoints, two distinct approaches to energy. Luckily or unluckily, I remember the 70s and the oil crisis of 1973. Have we forgotten how OPEC's embargo caused oil prices to soar from several dollars a barrel to over $10 a barrel in 1976, and then all the way up to $40 a barrel in 1980? Remember those times when we waited in a line for gas, those odd-even days for license plates? Well, here we are in 2013, and guess what is causing the fluctuations in the price of oil? Speculators, regulatory restrictions on production, and the world situation in the Middle East. Instead of the good old USA and our abundant supply of oil, coal, and potential for nuclear energy, why is this happening? Someone or something must not be doing their job. Well, that brings us back to the Department of Energy. Should not this department be doing or recommending to the current administration what we should be doing to keep energy prices low and the U.S. not dependent on happenings outside our borders? Should not the Keystone Pipeline be authorized? Just looking back to the year 2000, the price of gas was under $2 a gallon. And yet today, if you filled up, you'd be paying over $3 per gallon, depending on where you live. And just as we are spending more for our fuel, so also we see that this department's budget has gone up by 71% from $15 billion to $25.7 billion in 2011. Has our dependence on foreign oil decreased by anything even near 50%? The agency, from its 2011 report, states that its operating budget for 2012 was $26.4 billion. In looking at the financial statement presented by the agency, it is evident that the total liabilities of the agency exceeded the assets by a margin of more than 2-to-1, being that the assets were $180.9 billion while total liabilities were $398.6. Further, that of the total liabilities, only $24.9 billion was covered by budgetary resources, while the rest remain liabilities not covered by the budgetary resources, which included unfunded environmental liabilities, pension and other actuarial liabilities, nuclear waste fund deferred revenues, and all other unfunded liabilities totaling $373.7 billion. Do you not wonder which agencies are helping along the deficit and thereby creating and growing the national debt, which is rapidly trending towards $17 trillion? It also states in its report that for 2012, the department had 15,671 federal employees. However, it also had 92,419 contract employees for over 107,000 people working for it. What are all these people doing? Well, taking a quick look at its website and looking at the organizational structure, I found that this department, as others, is run by a secretary, which is a cabinet-level position. Now, the reason I mention is that cabinet-level positions have the ear of the president due to a fairly frequent schedule of meetings held with the president in the White House. The department is run by a secretary, a deputy secretary, and an associate deputy secretary. This is the threesome that drives the engine of the Department of Energy. These three people also have direct responsibility for additional offices such as the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, overseen by the Secretary, Advanced Research Projects Agency, and the Loan Programs Office are overseen by the Deputy Secretary. And lastly, the Associate Deputy Secretary oversees the Chief of Staff and Technology Transfer Coordination. One would think that would be enough, but lo and behold, below the above-mentioned threesome, there is another threesome of undersecretaries which oversees 46 separate and unique subdivisions of the Department of Energy. Folks, I have learned my lesson, and no, I'm not going to list these various types of administrators and their sections. But lest I forget, this department also maintains an Energy Board Advisory Group consisting of 13 members who are former government employees, former chairmen or CEOs of companies, or directors of various boards. And yes, all these entities have staffs and spend our dollars. Remember, this department has twice as many liabilities as assets. Before I proceed, I must be getting better at looking at this structure called government and seeing the anomalies. Ah, but wait, an anomaly is something out of the ordinary or norm. These are not anomalies because they are nothing more or less than government duplication in excess. Under the Office of the Undersecretary of Science, we have a subcategory for workforce development for teachers and scientists. Duh, should not this be a responsibility of the Department of Education? Also, we have two separate offices for counterterrorism. Should not this be a function of the Department of Homeland Security? Mind you, this is just within the grouping of 46 that I found these duplications. Let me read you another quote. This from a panel report entitled Department of Energy Managing at the Speed of Light. This by the National Academy of Public Administrators. The panel report from July of 2009 states, I quote, with over 16,000 employees, an additional 100,000 contracted employees, and an annual budget of nearly $25 billion devoted to these critical tasks, DOE urgently needs and deserves world-class mission-supported functions. This urgency is compounded by the nation's financial crisis and DOE's newest responsibility, quickly dispersing and effectively overseeing over $30 billion in contract and grant authority and issuing tens of billions of dollars in loan guarantees under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. Need I remind the listener of the failed green energy projects funded by the Department of Energy? I recently read another article referencing 34 companies which wasted approximately $7.3 billion, of which 19 companies filed for bankruptcy. Just for the heck of it, I randomly selected the last company on the list and did a bit of digging. Mascoma Corp., a Delaware corporation involved in biofuels, received approximately $100 million from the taxpayers of America. In an article dated June the 25th, 2012, entitled Green Company Awarded Up to $120 Million, Promising 70 Jobs, Created Just 3 Jobs in 3 Years. That's the title. In this article, it stated that this company filed an S-1 form with the Securities and Exchange Commission to go public in an IPO, but changed its mind later, stating poor market conditions and, as of this podcast, has not gone public but withdrew its application. However, due to this filing, information gleaned from that filing showed that the CEO in 2010 received $5 million in total compensation. Think of it, $100 million from taxpayers, 3 jobs created, $5 million paid to the CEO. What a deal for the company and a rip on the taxpayers. Several other articles corroborated this information about Mascoma Corp. Point being, when government tries to influence the marketplace, it usually messes up, and the taxpayer ends up holding the money bag. The Department of Energy during 2010 was busier dispersing monies from the ARRA funding alternative energy projects that went belly up than being concerned with using the resources we have and developing those known sources of energy for the betterment of the citizens of the United States. Recall the department's own statement from the beginning, transformative science and technology solutions. Would not that $7.2 billion have been spent better on upgrading our current coal plants so that we have a guaranteed energy in the foreseeable future, and let private industry in the marketplace weed out the bad and encourage and help the good? Here's the reality. From the website World Nuclear Reality, this information was gleaned. In 2011, of the electricity generated in the United States, 43% came from coal-fired plants, 24% from gas-fired, 19% from nuclear, 8% from hydro, which is water power, and 2.8% from wind. Now, the 2.8% has been updated a little bit to over 3% now. The DOE has given us failed solar energy projects and plants. Windmills that cost more per kilowatt hour are highly subsidized, and don't forget the carcasses of birds beneath them, terminating in the possibility in the near future of major brownouts. Let me just say this. What is there in abundance of underground of late? Yes, oil and natural gas. This from a Forbes article dated 12/21/12 entitled, Why It's the End of the Line for Wind Power. Natural gas power plants do not require any kind of taxpayer subsidies. Gas is plentiful. It's far greener than the coal-burning plants that are being phased out every day. Wind has a place in the generation mix, and if consumers are willing to pay through the nose for 100% wind power, then they should be free to do so. But it's hard to justify wasting more taxpayer dollars propping up a technology that has had more than a decade to establish itself and yet still can't stand on its own. Folks, when we as a government have to borrow 42 cents out of every dollar, ask yourself, can we afford these energy transformative science and technology solutions? I dare say no. So do your own research. Talk to your friends and neighbors about this most critical element of our economy and the solutions and practices being imposed on us by the Department of Energy. Friends, I hope in listening to this series on the executive branch of our government, you are starting to see that we are not getting much bang for our buck. Well, until next time, in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.